Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are joined by
Rhea Fiken,
the First Lady of Maryland Public Television. And we're talking because Monday there will be a special airing at 8 p.m. called Rhea, A Life in Television. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me here. It's fun.
Now, have you seen the documentary, the special yet?
I haven't seen it, but I know what it's about. And it was kind of a funny idea, I thought. It was Eric Newman's idea. And he thought that for so many years I've been interviewing people that it was time to turn the tables and have people interview me. So that's what he did. He picked four people, and he picked four terrific people. And I think it's going to be fun, I hope.
Oh, definitely. Now, let's go, if you don't mind, you mentioned that there's four people interviewing you. Let's go through them one by one and talk about, you know, your interactions with them. So I know a big deal here is that we got filmmaker John Waters, who we all know from Pink Flamingos to Hairspray to so many other ones. What was it like getting grilled by that master? I believe the focus of that was sort of your early days at BAM, right?
Well, it was a lot of things. You know, I have known John since before he was famous. So we go back together. I was actually in a couple of his movies. I had very small parts. Best part was in Hairspray. So I have interviewed John lots and lots of times for various things. But this was the first time he interviewed me. And you can imagine the things he wanted to know about. I just was a little nervous, but it turned out fine.
What are some of those things you mentioned, the things you wanted to know about?
Well, he talked about my knowing me in my early days and some things about my early days, which I don't know how many people knew about, but they'll know about them now. And John loves to be called eccentric and weird and all those things, but basically, John is just a wonderful friend and a very kind person. And I think one of the reasons he gets away with what he does is because it's never mean-spirited, really.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that you had a brief part in Hairspray. It's a geometry teacher, I believe. Memories of being on that set and you know, that's a pretty deep cast members there.
Well, but at the time, nobody was real famous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I actually didn't see very many people because I just had that one time. And then I saw them at cast parties and things like that. But John is so laid back and easy. He knows specifically what he wants, but it's a very pleasant experience being in one of his plays, one of his movies. So it was fun. I was very excited about it, and I had never really been in a movie. And I still get residuals. Every year I get about $2.50 from SAG for being in Hairspray.
Hey, that'll cover. That's about enough to cover purchase Hairspray. There you go.
Yeah, right.
does he get into the puppet JP? Is that during the water segment?
He did, but you know, when we did the interview, we talked for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Then it was out of my hands, out of his hands, and up to Eric and the editor. So I'm not exactly sure which parts of what we talked about are going to be on the show. I've not seen the show.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Well, remind some of our younger listeners what the deal was with the puppet JP then.
With JP?
Yeah.
Well, Gulf Oil, a long, long time ago, decided that they were going to sponsor weather shows throughout the country. And they asked all the stations to send in a video of what they would be doing, who would be doing it, et cetera. Brent Guntz was the general manager, and he called Cal Schumann, who was a puppeteer, and I, who we had done a children's show. And he said, you know, I don't think people really care about highs and lows and barometric pressures. Just do something that's kind of fun and amusing. So that's what we did. We made up this thing with this crazy-looking puppet, and they sent it off. And lo and behold, Gulf Oil chose us to do it. And it was quite an experience because neither one of us knew one thing about meteorology. So we had to use a teletype machine to call the Weather Bureau to find out what the weather was going to be. Not very scientific.
I love it. All right, cool. So we mentioned John Waters, and then you also have U.S. Senator Barbara Mikulski, and I believe she focuses a lot about, you know, you growing up, your family life in Hampton, in Baltimore. How did you meet Barbara? Why was she one of the ones tapped to do this?
Well, I can't remember exactly when I first met her, but it was a long time ago, and I would see the senator at various functions, and at one point, I don't know whether this would be included on the show or not, but it was, I went to a big party with my late husband, Colgate, and he was not a very outgoing person. And we went to this party, and they had music and dancing and stuff like that. And at one point, I was talking to somebody, and I finished talking, and I couldn't find Gate anywhere. And I looked on the dance floor, and there he is with the senator, just jitterbugging and carrying on. I thought, I can't believe this is happening. And I did remind Senator about that, and she remembered it, too. And she has a great memory.
That's great. Then we also have Michael Ross, obviously the executive director at Baltimore Center Stage. And, you know, you guys will, together, you get to go into how much you love the theater and, you know, just Maryland art scene in general. What all did you talk about with Michael?
Well, I don't know, again, what was included, but I was a founder of Center Stage, if you can believe it. Lo, those many years ago. And I got to be in the first play, a very small part, because they only could afford 4 equity actors, and the rest of the cast was made up of people like me, who, of course, didn't get paid. And the part that I love about this whole story is that the first play was La Ronde, and it was about a young man and the various people in his life. And I was in the first scene, and I was the young maid who has a dalliance with the young man. And although I was married at the time, many, many years later, I was unmarried and married that young man who was in La Ronde with me.
Wow. That's fun. It's funny how that all works.
Yeah, and I loved acting, but really and truly, being in a play at Center Stage with really these fine actors made me realize that I would never be that good. I would never be able to really lose myself and be somebody else. And so I thought that maybe I better look for something else to do. And of course, television came along, and it suited me well because I could be myself. And that was good. As my husband once said to me one time, you know, you really are a very good actor. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you are. You're great. You can only do one part, you, but you do it really well. And so I think that's the truth.
That's all you need sometimes. You just need just whatever yourself is, just own that one. Okay, and then we also have, MPT's president CEO Larry Unger on there. What all do you guys get into? Do you get into Chesapeake collectibles or artworks this week?
He didn't talk too much. He just talked about how much I had done and how much they were going to miss me, and it was just very sweet. I worked for a lot of different presidents, as you can imagine, since I was there for such a long time. And I have to say he was definitely my favorite and the one who I think really changed the atmosphere at Maryland Public Television, became much more open, and he was always available, and he listened to everybody. And I think it's a different environment there than it was earlier.
Explain what you mean by that, how he changed the atmosphere, before he came in, what was it like?
A lot of the presidents, we never got to know them. I mean, I guess, the vice presidents and maybe even some of the producers got to know them, but primarily they stayed in their office and did whatever they did nationally and went to meetings and, you know, whatever. And people reported to them, and that was it. Larry was always walking around the halls, and he got to know everybody. He would, you know, ask about things in their personal life that he knew about, good things, bad things, you know. He had an open door policy. People got to feel that they, whatever they were doing at the station, if they had a feeling about how it could be improved or they had a problem with it, they could talk to him. That was different.
That's, yeah, for sure. Oh, that's cool. They included him on here then. If he's
yeah.
And then, of course, you know, finally they, you know, your longtime, you know, your fellow pledge host, Donald Toms. Man, I mean, that's what most people will tune in. That's probably the one that they're looking forward to see him talk about you the most. What did you guys get into? Did you talk some about, you know, your favorite pledge guests?
Yeah, well, we talked, yeah, I did, but I don't know whether that was on that segment or not. I mean, my all-time favorite guest. I don't know whether we talked about that then. I can tell you who my all-time favorite guest is.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he was my favorite guest because I had a tremendous crush on him, and I was beside myself to get to interview Jeremy Irons.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow, that's right. And it was extremely exciting, and he was a guest, I guess, of one of the theater groups in Washington, Shakespeare Theater, I guess. And they had a gala, and he was the guest artist. And so we got a chance to interview him along with all the press. But since we had done so many pieces for artworks, we sort of wrangled more time with him. And the time we were allotted was 10 minutes. And they had a makeup artist there for him. Am I boring you with all this stuff?
No, are you kidding me? I'm a huge Dead Ringers fan. And
So they had brought in a makeup artist, and they had a huge table filled with all kinds of makeup. Not for me, for him. And because it was Jeremy Irons, we got there early, and we were all set up. We had two cameras and two sound people, and the chairs were set up, and there were monitors so that the camera people could see what they were doing. And in walks Jeremy Irons, and, you know, he looked like Jeremy Irons, you know, bags under his eyes, kind of fabulous-looking, unsmiling person. And he walked in. He didn't say anything with the PR person from Shakespeare Theater. And he looked at all the makeup on the makeup table. And then he looked at me in the monitor. And he looked back and he said to me, "Do you think I need makeup?" And I said, "No, I don't think you do," which I didn't. And, of course, the makeup person was ready to kill me. And he walked out and he said, I need a smoke. I'll be back. So he came back, and we were supposed to have like 10 minutes with him. He sat down, and I had really done my homework because I've seen everything he had done, I think.
Sure.
And the first thing he said when he sat down was, "You're an actress, aren't you?" And I said, no, I'm really not. And he just said, "Oh, yes, you are. Now let's begin." And I was unnerved from the beginning, but he not only was willing to talk, but he talked in complete sentences with never an or anything, and got really interested in what we were talking about. And every time the person would make a signal that he was to stop, he just ignored it. Consequently, we had over 40 minutes of material and made a half-hour show out of it. So that was my Jeremy Irons experience.
Wow, that's awesome. Do you have any personal favorite Jeremy Irons role?
Oh, well, you know, I started loving him early on, but I do think the thing he did for public television was fabulous. You know, Brideshead Revisited.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that ever?
No, I never saw that.
Oh, God, you should see it. Really.
Okay.
He's quite young, and he's fabulous, and it is a fabulous production.
Wow.
But I like everything he did.
Yeah, I always think of him as that when he played the twin brothers in the Cronenberg thing, the Dead Ringers. But
yeah.
Also, you should have asked him why he killed Mufasa.
Yeah, I don't think I asked him that at all. But it was really exciting because I admired him as an actor so much.
That's
and
so
also
cool.
Because I thought he was really hot.
Well, in addition to Jeremy Irons, any others that you know that influential guests that stand out?
Well, you know, I really had a good time with almost all of them. You know, they would all. Some of them, you got the feeling that they knew how to be good and do a nice interview. A few of them. People that I interviewed, not so much. They really, you know, thought they were doing a big favor, but that wasn't true. I got to interview Nora Roberts, the writer.
Oh, wow.
And I was fascinated by her because I knew nothing about her except the books that she wrote when I read a few of them. And her publicist made it very clear that there were certain things we couldn't ask her and certain places we couldn't go. There were a lot of no, 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 and no's. And apparently she had done CBS Sunday Morning and was unhappy with the results, so she was reticent about doing this. But I don't know. We just hit it off. I mean, she had walked in and she has this kind of gravelly voice, like somebody who maybe smokes and drinks. And she was straightforward and really interesting. And we just hit it off. And again, as the interview went on, she got more and more engrossed in it. And the do's and don'ts just disappeared. And we got to talk about everything. And she was exciting and how her career started and how she feels about it. And one of the things I remember about it, here is this woman who's on the New York Times bestseller list almost always with either one or other of her books. She's well known and sold widely in Europe. And she has no stuff about her. She's just kind of down to earth and real and not interested in the glamour world that she could be a part of if she chose to.
Right, right.
So she was an eye-opener.
That's cool.
So, I don't know, I remember interviewing one person who was very famous, and now I'm going to forget his last name. He's a music producer. David, help me, I can't think of his last name.
Foster?
Yes, David,
okay.
Thank you.
There you go.
And he was great. He was really fun to talk to in the green room in between, and he told stories, and he had jeans, you know, that were cut out in the knees, and I mean, he was fabulous and funny, and after several of the breaks we did, we were sitting in the green room, and I said, are you really this nice, or you just know how to act nice? And he just smiled, and he said, a little bit of both. And I love that answer because it was the truth.
I love that. Yeah, I love hearing I love interviewing people that have done interviews before, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
everyone
sort of has a different style. Like, I remember we interviewed Larry King, and he said he never prepared a damn question in his whole career, whereas Dick Cavett said that he used to do it so much at the beginning that he would be almost over-prepared and miss what the person was saying. So I'm loving hearing, you know, your style.
So where do you fall in that?
I think it's a little bit, it's sort of a little of both, I guess. Like, I think it's nice to have a basic outline, you know, like if you're a football team, you're not going to go out without a playbook, but, I you know, deviate from it as soon as you bring up something cool, you know, you mention you're in Hairspray, we go there. You know what I mean?
I feel the same way. I try to be prepared, but I'm willing to throw the whole thing out. if somebody goes somewhere else, and I think that's really more interesting than anywhere I might have gone.
Yeah, exactly, because usually it is.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, you were talking about how Jeremy Irons never says ums and ahs. I'm sure I do it all the time. But
Me too.
You come with a speech, you know, pathology degree from the start there in Baltimore City. So remind our listeners that that's, ironically, that's sort of how you got into television. So, you know, it was Betty Better Speech, right.
Yeah,
tell us about how you got that opportunity, because it's like an educational show, right?
Well, it was a long time ago, and so long ago that I think it was before public television. And so the FCC would from time to time ask stations to devote a certain amount of time for public service programming. And somehow or another, I don't know how it happened, they decided to do something with the Department of Education on speaking. And I was a speech therapist. At the time, I was right out of college. All I wanted to do was be an actress, but I was a speech therapist. And they said, who wants to do this? And everybody in the department, I thought, was ancient. They were probably about 40. And that, when I was 21, that was old. And so I wanted to do it. Yeah, I'll do it. And that's how it happened. I did it. And when it was over, I was called into Brent Gunce's office. And he said, would you like to do a kid show? And I didn't walk. I ran to do it. And that was it. And that was the beginning of my television career.
Yeah, Betty Better Speech, and Miss Rhea and Miss Rhea and Sunshine. It just snowballs from there.
Yeah, and that was so much fun to do, because I did it with Cal Schumann. He was absolutely a crazy, wonderful person, but totally unreliable, and because he drank a lot. And we would get together once a week and write the shows for the week, because he was the puppeteer, and we had these puppets that had all different kinds of personalities, and we would make up stories that involved them. And it was so much fun. It really was fun, and fun to do and fun to work with him, because he would say and do very unexpected things. I mean, we didn't script any of it. We just scripted the idea, but not the actual words. So you had to be on your toes.
For sure. And then once you did get to MPT, I know a lot of you probably became a household name, at least for all of this Maryland viewers, with Consumer Survival Kit. Any memories of what you enjoyed by doing that one so much?
Oh, I just loved doing all those things, because I got to go to lots of different places. And this is probably not anything you're going to be interested in using, but it was funny. We were doing one on Oriental rugs, and the researchers had chosen a place in New York called Marjan International, which was on Fifth Avenue, and it was a huge rug store, family-owned, and they had antique rugs and new rugs and everything. And so we went up there, and the family, they were Persian. And the whole family stood around and watched as we taped the segments. And the person from the family that I talked with was the youngest. And he was fun to talk to, and we had a good time. And we taped for about 3 hours or so, and then took a break. And the family's all standing there. And we sat on these rolled-up rugs. And I cannot ever tell you why this came out of my mouth, because it certainly didn't come out of my head. I, at one point, I just turned to this guy and I said, are you Jewish? And there was just complete silence. The family was silent. All the people from MPT, not only silent, didn't move. I mean, there was this moment, and I was sort of terrified. I mean, and finally he just turned around to me and said, yes, I am. Are you? I said, yes, I am. And then everybody started to laugh. It was just this crazy moment. I always remember that. Anyhow, they gave me a nice little prayer rug as a gift.
Nice. That was a close call. Awesome. Well, I mean, I guess sort of, you know, you've been generous with your time. Man, I didn't realize we've been going for almost a half hour. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
I guess sort of in closing, you know, I know you just retired, what was it, on March 1st, I think? God, right before all the corona stuff hit, so you had no idea of knowing. But, you know, what went into the decision to retire? You know, how hard was it to leave after all those years? Or were you just itching to get to have some free time?
Well, you know, it was just, I didn't think about it a lot, but I sort of finally one day realized that, you know, the time has come. I have been doing this for so long. I will be celebrating in July my 85th birthday. And I thought,
congratulations.
You know, I better leave before they want me to leave. I mean, I didn't want ever to have that happen. So I thought, this is the time. And I went into Larry's office and said, Larry, and he said, I bet I know what you're going to say. I've been dreading this conversation. And that was it. And the station was just wonderful to me and did so many nice things. And I appreciate the many, many emails I got and letters. And it was a happy retirement.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah, well, any big plans for the retirement?
I'm going to watch a lot of television. I love television. I love all the movies and the things on Netflix and Amazon, and I'm going to walk, and I'm going to do my yoga, and I'm going to do very little else.
All right, cool. Well, you're really generous with your time, and we're looking forward to watching it. It's Rhea, A Life in Television, airs Monday night. So where will you be watching? Will you be on the couch?
Alone, because I'm you know, I'm still unable to have people in my apartment, so I'm watching it all by myself.
Well, we'll all be connected, just like all those, you know, famous fundraiser drives.
Jason, thank you so much for doing this.
All right, thank you so much.
Bye.